lifting me higher.
Good evening and welcome. It's KBC Arts, arts and entertainment, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. Tonight we have KBCR's Lillian Vasquez in conversation with Curtis Sharp, who's organized a project in Loma Linda which utilizes art and making it easier to get around. We'll also hear from Katie Nichols, one of the artists whose work will be used, and submissions are still being accepted. More on that later in the program. First, though, Bobby Brooks Wilson, the son of the legendary Jackie Wilson. He shares the birthday of Gene Chandler, the Duke of Earl. I featured Gene last week, so tonight we hear from Bobby, and his story starts with him not knowing that he was the son of Jackie Wilson. He was singing, though, karaoke.
Yeah, I got out of the Navy. Only reason why I was out of the Navy is because I passed kidney stones.
Okay.
My original plan was to stay in the Navy till I retired at 30 years. I was in the process of going what they call Mustang. So I was on my way to officer training school when I started passing those stones.
Mm.
So once I got the medical discharge, I found myself sitting in Waikiki wondering what I was going to do the rest of my life, waiting on my medical discharge. And I was hanging out with the Samoans because when I joined the Navy, I was 140 pounds, soaking wet. When I got out, I was 240. So the locals thought I was Samoan.
Right, exactly. Yes. I'm picturing you. That's why I'm laughing at you. So.
Yeah. I had no idea these guys, when they invited me to the karaoke bar, they were inviting me to a place where people sing and eat poo-poos, which is appetizers, chicken wings and whatever, and drink.
That's the courage to get up to the karaoke.
The thing about it, in those days, they didn't have stages. So you actually sang at your table. You didn't have to have a lot of courage. So after a few drinks, you know, of Coke,
Sure.
I got the nerve up to sing a song. And that's when this guy, Peter Hernandez Sr., walked up to me, offered me a job in show business. He had a famous doo-wop group called the Love Notes. There's seven guys and seven young ladies, and we were doing all the music of the 50s and 60s. They had a little boy on there named Bruno, who was playing Baby Elvis in the show. Also, his brother, who was playing drums, his name was Eric. And then his sister, Leilani, who was one of the singers. It was a family show plus other members. Of course, the kid turns out to be Bruno Mars, the pop star. And Bruno got signed with Motown, but after 9 months, they dropped him.
Oh.
Yeah, so he's kind of stuck in a circle of pain for about 5 years, where he was working every dive bar you can think of in L.A. And at one time, he kind of reached out to me and other people in his family and said, hey, I think I'm going to go back to Hawaii and give up on this music thing. And I said, Bruno, you're 22 years old. Call me when you're 30. If you haven't figured it out by 30... I said, then we'll come up with a plan. I said, but you in L.A., work L.A., and he did.
So at this point, you still didn't know who your father was at this point?
It was over time because I was working with the Love Notes, and a show opened up in Waikiki called the Legends in Concert show, an impersonation show. Paul Revere and the Raiders was the owner, along with a guy named John Stewart, the producer. They came over to our show and wanted to see Bruno. Well, when they saw Bruno, they saw me. And that's when Paul Revere walked up to me and said, hey, man, you know who you look like? You know who you sound like? Blah, 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 blah. It was going on and on and on. Long story short, Paul Revere offered me a job with the impersonation show.
I read that your response was that you were a performer, not an impersonator. So you actually turned it down at first.
I turned it down 3 times. Now, growing up, my mom told me if it comes in threes, God is talking to you. When he asked me the third time, I gave up and said, okay, I'll come and see your show. Because he asked me, hey, come and be Jackie Wilson. I was like, nope, I'm an artist. And then the second time, I ran into him and his wife, Sydney. And he said, what happened? I told you to come to the show. And I said, oh, you know, I'm an artist. I don't do impersonation. He went hogwash. And then the third time, when I ran into him the third time, I paid attention. In the back of my head, my mom said, if it comes in threes, you got to pay attention. So I went to the show, fell in love with it. At that time, I didn't know who Paul Revere was.
Oh, really?
Paul Revere and the Raiders.
Oh, gosh.
I had no idea who he was.
He's just some guy in a bar for you. Okay, okay.
Yeah. As far as I was concerned, you know, just another fool trying to talk me into a job that I didn't want to do.
Just say you will, say you will.
Paul turns out to be a father figure to me. I wound up working for him where I was getting constant advice from Paul and direction. And so the family reached out to me about a year after I was with Legends. Somebody in Detroit heard that they had a Jackie Wilson playing in Hawaii. and they called the home office in Vegas and said, we want to meet them and approve them.
Before the Wilson family reached out, you had to have been told over and over, beyond Paul Revere, that you looked like Jackie Wilson, that you sounded like this guy Jackie Wilson. And my gosh, with all your karaoke, I'd be surprised if you hadn't done Higher and Higher.
Here's the funny thing. You got to remember, I was still 240 pounds.
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
I used to shave my head.
Okay, okay.
And I used to wear a pencil-thin mustache, so Pete said I used to look like a killer. But Pete said, listen, I need to change your whole demeanor. I said, what do you mean? You need to lose weight. You need to grow hair. Can you do a pompadour? And I'm like, what's a pompadour? You know? He's like, see Bruno's hair? Yeah, that's what it's got to be. I said, man, I don't know if I can grow hair. You know, I've been shaving my head since the day I joined the Navy. But he goes, well, let's let it grow and see what happens, and we'll show you how to do it. At the same time, he says, you got to lose weight, because I couldn't fit into the suits. My arms were too big. It wouldn't close around my belly. So he finally found some big coats to put on me to cover me. And then Peter to tell me to turn sideways, because all the other guys were skinny Filipino-looking guys. And so I was the ugliest guy on the group. And some of them let me know, to be honest. So as I start evolving and becoming an entertainer, I was very comfortable just being a background singer and nothing else. I was just happy as a lark singing the harmony parts, the second tenor, first tenor, and false. But then as I start to grow, I said, wait a minute, I can sing in the Still of the Night. Hold on, I can sing the Skyliners song. As I started growing, that's when Peter said, hey, we got the Jackie Wilson medley. We want you to do it instead of the guy that had been doing it for years, Mike Baker. He wasn't very happy that they gave me his lead, which was Lonely Teardrops High and Higher medley.
Okay.
Well, the first time I did it, Pete said, just do your own thing. I didn't know nothing about Jackie Wilson. I'd never seen him. So as far as I was concerned, Mike Baker looked like Jackie Wilson, because, you know, I figured he'd been doing it so long, he probably looked like the guy. I wouldn't know what he looked like.
It's your only point of reference.
First time and there was no YouTube, there was no internet, you know, none of that stuff. And so I never forget, I jump up, doing the first medley of Jackie Wilson's Higher, Higher, Lonely Teardrops. I put my own spin to it, and people went berserk. We got a reaction from me that we never got ever from anybody else. And Peter was like, wow, that's strange. So the next couple shows, the same reaction. People just going crazy and jumping around like I'm Michael Jackson. And then I continued it until Paul offered me the job, and then I took it really serious then, got myself a vocal coach, and she was an opera singer. Her name was Rhonda, Queen of the South Pacific. She had 35 gold albums in New Zealand.
Oh my God.
And she was an opera singer. And she took me on by recommendation of another lady named Nancy Burnell, who was the Screen Actors Guild president in Hawaii. She gave me this lady's name. She said, she don't take everybody, but try her. I said, yeah, because I got to learn how to sing like this guy. But when I took the classes with her, she said, you already got his voice and his range. She said, I just have to teach you how to sing like him. And she did. Now, fast forward. Paul talks me into it. People in the audience start saying, hey, you look like Jackie. You sound like Jackie. A friend of mine found a picture of Jackie Wilson at the library, put it in the frame, and gave it to me. She says, wow, this looks like you. And I freaked out on that one.
Yeah.
Then Peter from Love Notes, he showed me a couple albums of Jackie Wilson with Billy Ward's Dominoes. It looked like me in the pictures, and the expression on his face, I felt like I could read what he was thinking. He looked so much like me. I was like, can this guy hurry up with his picture? That's what I got from the expression on his face. You know, so, I mean, that's how much it really hit me. Now, fast forward, I meet some of the Wilsons, and we have a little bit of a talk about who my parents, and that's when I first told them, oh, I grew up in a foster home, but they really wasn't concerned. They just wanted to make sure that I did a good tribute to their dad. So they were very happy when they first met me back in 1994 in Vegas. Then I go to Atlantic City. Paul Revere said, hey, Bob, I'm going to send you to Atlantic City. That's where Jackie Wilson was king of New York, the East Coast.
Cool.
He was king. I'm sending you over there. 2-3 weeks in, I get approached by the entertainment director for Ballast, saying that the Four Tops want to meet me. And I'm like, okay. I was thrilled to death. I never met the Four Tops.
Yeah.
So he takes me upstairs to the green room, and the first thing Lawrence Payton says to me is, you got to be family. Are you being Bobby right now, or are you being Jackie? Like a few seconds, I'm just standing in front of him. I said, sir, I'm being Bobby. I don't know what Jackie would be like. And they start laughing. And then Levi turns to me and says, you sure do. You got to get up early in the morning to be like my cousin. You got to get up early in the morning. And then I looked at Levi, and I said, Levi, I think I sound more like you than Jackie Wilson. And he looked at me and went, and walked away. And everybody laughed and said, he's a grump. He's always, don't worry about it. He loves you. I didn't. And from then on, I created a bond with Lawrence and Duke and Obi. And then they reached out to a guy named Billy Roquel Davis that went by the pen name T. Carlos. That was their cousin and my dad's cousin. Billy co-wrote, along with Berry Gordy, To Be Loved, Lonely Teardrops, I'll Be Satisfied, That's Why I Love You So, all those first 15 hits that Jackie had with Brunswick. Now, of course, Berry Gordy was involved because Billy was dating Gwen Gordy. He was living with her. And the way the story goes, and I put it that way, the way the story goes, because it's not my story.
Disclaimer.
Yeah, Billy was working for Brunswick, in charge of all the writers, and Gwen said, my brother needs a job. Can you help him out? He's a songwriter. And Billy said, sure, your brother. First song they worked on was Lonely Teardrops, and then along with that was To Be Loved, which were Berry's songs. The first song that Billy made them work on was Reap the Teeth, which was Billy's song. Before Reap the Teeth, it was called So Fine. Billy became my mentor, my father. He became my bridge with the Jackie Wilson family. And then once I met some of the siblings, we did the blood work, and then I found out that he was my dad.
Wow.
And once I was confirmed, it took me a little while to accept it because I was like, well, what does it mean? Well, I found out what it really meant to me was I got to work harder. Because then everybody's looking at me saying, is he really Jackie's son? Can he sing? Can he dance? I could see why people were like, you know, giving me the second look.
Most certainly.
But I guess I have it naturally. Dionne Warwick said, man, if Jackie knew you was around, he would have knocked down doors. She said, let me introduce you to Harlene. Harlene was the second wife. Dionne introduced me to Harlene. And later on, so many different people that touched my life and worked with me with the Wilson family. And then, of course, my brother Thor, we became the closest out of all the family. Me, Thor, Sabrina, and a few more became very, very close. I don't know if you know, but I lost Thor just a few weeks ago.
Oh, no.
To aneurysm.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, me too. Because he was an avid flag carrier for our father's music. So as a team, he and I was working hard. You know, that's my thing now. I'm carrying the torch for my dad as well as for myself, making sure the music get out there and keeping our father's name going.
Tell me, to be loved.
It's Music and Conversation with Bobby Brooks Wilson to start off this edition of KVC Arts. BobbyBrooksWilson.com for more. Later in the program, we have KVCR's Lillian Vasquez in conversation with Curtis Sharp, who's organized a project in Loma Linda which utilizes art and makes it easier to get around. We'll also hear from Katie Nichols, one of the artists whose work will be used. First, though, back to Bobby Brooks Wilson, who sounds very much like his father, that's Jackie Wilson. He also looks so much like him as well. We were speaking of Higher and Higher just a bit ago, and there's a YouTube clip right there when you go to your page of you doing Higher and Higher. And talk about if someone questioned, you can see your dance, your energy, you're moving to it, you're peeling off the jacket and letting the audience go, this is a clip that people need to go see. And that also leads me to something else before we go to your CD, It's About Time. With you looking so much like your dad, with your hair currently the way it is, and you're performing cruise ships most of the week or oldie shows or whatnot, I would love to hear some of these times. I know they've got to be happening when performers from Jackie's era were just staring dumbstruck and just want to touch you and see if it's really your dad.
I picked up so many family, I call them family members now, since I got in the oldie circuit. Charlie Thomas of the Drifters, I call
him
Uncle Charlie now.
Yeah.
He told me I'm more like Jackie than Jackie. J.T. Carter of the Crest.
Yep, yep.
The founder of the Crest. J.T. said when he was talking to me, he had to keep shaking himself that I was not Jackie.
Ooh.
But J.T. keeps saying, wait a minute, you got his spirit. He says, your aura is his. He says, it's like, last time I talked to Jackie, it feels like I'm talking to Jackie again.
Hmm.
I get that a lot from all the people that worked with him. And Shirley Austin Reed, she said, oh, my God, Jackie stands before me.
Wow.
And it gives me goosebumps. It makes me very thankful, and it's a confirmation almost every time I'm in front of somebody, they see or feel or hear my dad.
Beautiful.
So there's nothing I can do but carry it and just be it. Like I said at one time, I kind of was running away from it, but nothing was happening for me when I ran away from it. When I embraced it, the whole world opened. There you go.
Yeah. The folks that you just mentioned, I've had wonderful at length conversation with Charlie Thomas, JT, and Shirley, so I can picture them saying this to you, and that's really nice.
Yeah, Uncle Charlie, the last time I saw him was the Malt Shop Cruise. He said, "How come you haven't called me?" I was like, "Uncle Charlie, I'm working. I'd love to be on the phone." I said, "Most of the time when I was on the phone, I wasn't working." And he laughed. He goes, "Okay, well, as long as you're working, okay."
Yes, indeed.
But call me. I want to talk to you. I got stories for you. I want to share stuff with you.
Oh.
I said, "Yes, sir. Yes, sir." Which I will call him.
He does have stories. Charlie's great.
Yes, he's great. Yeah, and he still got it. He still got that sound.
Oh, he does. He does. It was a treat to be able to see him perform.
The sound.
Yeah.
And then I met Frankie Avalon. I just met a couple weeks ago on the Malt Shop Cruise.
Oh, how cool!
This year, and Jerry Blavitt. Frankie Avalon, when he saw me, he grabbed my arm and said, "Don't go nowhere." And I went, "Okay." I said, "It's an honor to meet you." He goes, "No, you don't go nowhere." And the other people were pulling on him. And then he turned around and he says, "Your dad, let me tell you what he done for me." And he started telling me these stories. And I'm like, man, it's just, my dad did a lot of good for a lot of people.
Wow.
And it's just stories that you never heard. Things that you're, B.J. Thomas.
Raindrops Keep Falling, okay.
Yeah, Raindrops Falling My Head.
Yeah.
We have the same agent that booked us. So she called me and said, "Hey, Bobby, B.J. Thomas is playing in Vegas. Go see him." I said, "Oh, okay." So I go to the show, and she sends him a message. One of my talents is going to be this. And when he found out I was Jackie's son, he stopped in the middle of the show and started singing To Be Loved a cappella.
Huh.
And then he said, "Jackie Wilson embraced me. He says, I just wrote my first hit song. It put me on a tour with all black acts." He says, "Get this. I'm on a bus, a school bus. With all black acts." And I walk on there and looked at all these guys, and it was complete silence. And he said, "Jackie Wilson didn't know who I was from Man on the..." And he walked up and said, "This is my brother. You elf with him, you got to elf with me." And he said, and that was the end of that. He says, "Everybody respected Jackie so much. That was the end of that. Oh, he's a brother. Okay, he's a brother." And he said, "So I'm a brother." So I guess my dad just broke that trance there was to see, you know, a white act walk up on the bus and do the same tour that they were doing.
Yeah.
And, of course, Buddy Holly was on that tour and other white acts were on that tour. But it was kind of funny the way B.J. Thomas told the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and thank you for telling me that.
The closer you get, the better you look, baby.
Let's look at It's About Time. When did this come out?
The fall of 2012 is when we put out the first release, which is Sweetest Feelings. Now, when we first started this project, it wasn't about going to radio. It was about having a product to sell in my shows because I didn't have any products.
Gotcha. Okay.
And then go back a little bit further, I did a show at Michael Feinstein's at Park Avenue in New York.
Oh, nice.
One of the guests that sat in the audience was Paul Schaefer.
Oh, okay.
And so Paul Schaefer watched the whole show. He walked up to me after the show and said, "Young man, may I have a picture with you?" And I was like, "Absolutely, you're Paul Schaefer," you know. And then the second question was, "Do you have a product that I can push on the Letterman show?" And I went, "No, I don't have anything," which I didn't. And he said, "Well, it's too bad because I would love to push you." He said, "Jackie Wilson is one of my favorite." And he said, "You are a clone." You know, he says, "You are just a clone." And so now, later, I get the product done with Tony, and we come up with a deal. And while we were in the studio laying down the track, some of the radio promoters was coming through. It was, I believe the studio was called Hilltop Studio, where George Strait, Toby Keith, everybody you can think of, Darius Rucker, they all recorded in the studio. So radio promoters like to drop by to listen to what might be coming out. So we were doing Sweetest Feeling when they came in. I was laying down scratch vocals, and they looked at Tony and said, "Oh, this is going to radio, right?" And Tony went, no, we're just doing the process. They go, "Why not?" Tony goes, "Well, he's not a 20-year-old artist, but he looks like it." So it says, "It's good, let's just go to radio." So I guess Tony thought about it and he called me up and said, "What do you think about us sending a single to radio?" I said, "Yeah, let's see what happens." And it immediately went from oblivion, it went from nobody knows who Bobby Brooks Wilson is to 79, the top 200.
Oh, wow.
79, the first day. Within 4 weeks, we was at 10 on Adult Contemporary and Urban AC. They said, well, here's the experiment. You got to put little or no money, and he went all the way to number 10. Imagine if you had a real budget for an artist. He would be another Bruno Mars. They said, let's put it in perspective. We got people who spends $1 million every day on records that never land on top 200.
Yeah, right.
And then you guys spent a little bit of money, and you went straight to 10. So, and we had 4 songs to do it. And now we have my current song, Bridges Are Burning, which is at 39 on iHeart Top 100. I'm happy.
Yes, well, you should be. Yes.
Blessing. So if there's any angel donors out there that want to get behind my career, let's get rich together.
BobbyBrooksWilson.com. I'll start there. Bridges Are Burning, I have to mention, when I was listening to this one, it's nice, gentle, but then building with the flow, kind of a R&B feel to this one. Well, one, I want to say that I was enjoying it as a beautiful song about someone. Then I get to the lyrics that let us know that she's now with someone else. So I guess spoiler alert here.
Right.
This is another one of yours. The CD is comprised of many of your dad's works, but then also several that you have writing credits with, and this one, Bridges Are Burning, is one of yours. Is this someone specific, or is this a scenario that you're imagining?
It's everybody.
Yeah?
It's everybody that's had their heart broken. It's everybody that believes in someone, and they let them down. It's me, but then it's just everybody. If you took a gamble on love, you've probably been in these shoes.
You gotcha.
Know, sometimes people get 50-50, sometimes people get 90-10, and you find out as you move along into love and out of love. But you got to keep loving. You can't just give up on one love. That's really my message. On the song, It's About Time, that song was about being a friend to somebody that you're in love with. And they finally see that they're in love with you too, and they know it. They just took your friendship for granted. Because you got people that's in your corner, whether it be your parents or your grandparents or your uncles. And a lot of times people take them for granted. They don't realize they're there in the corner. Then you have friends that you might be in love with secretly that you're too shy to come out and say that you are. So you support them in every way. And then they finally wake up one day and see, oh my gosh, this guy's been in front of me or this girl's been in front of me all my life and I never paid attention. I got to tell you more about It's About Time.
Please.
It's About Time was a premonition for me. God was working with me. It was in 1994. I just started working for Legends in Concert, and I just met Billy, and Billy said, you got to start writing. You're not going to get rich from working as a singer. You got to start writing. And I said, well, how do I don't know how to write. He said, just work on it. So I started buying books on writing and recognizing great writers and stuff like that. And songs started coming to me. And I was in my sleeping, and first I saw a sign. I saw myself with a red jacket on, no shirt, pompadour, my head turned to the side. It was like a picture pose.
Huh?
Then I saw the sign say, It's About Time, Bobby Brooks Wilson, in the bottom. And then the music came. It's about time, you see the one who cares for you. But the guy was Alan Jackson. It was his voice. So it was a country song, and it was a choir backing him up. But I heard it, and I was like, wow, this is good. It's about time you recognize love you so. And I was like, this is good. And then the voice said, write it down. By that time, I had took the advice of Billy, my mentor, and I had a tape player in my bed. Because he said, if it comes in the night, just sing what you hear. He said, get up, sing it, and then go back to sleep. Because when you go back to sleep, you won't remember it. Sure enough, I woke up, heard the whole song in its entirety, every word, every lyric. I sung it the way I heard it, put the tape player back down, and went to sleep. The next day, I woke up, and I forgot what it was. I played it, and then it came back to me. And then I picked out the chords on the guitar, sung it again, sent the tape to Billy. I sent him the tape and the lyrics, because Billy owns a publishing company called Chevis Publishing.
Okay.
So I sent him the song, and he called me back, because I'd sent him a lot of songs. His normal response is, tell me what's wrong with the song.
Right.
This particular time, he said, who helped you with this song?
Oh.
Yeah. And I said, no. I said, that one came in my dreams. He says, okay. I said, so I just wrote down what I heard. He said, this is a perfectly written song. I don't have to do nothing. He says, I will publish this song and shop it. And that was probably 95, 96. Ever since then, I've been saving that song to record. And I got quite a few other songs that I've written that way. But the ones that come like that, they come perfectly written. All I have to do is copy it.
Again, this we're talking about, It's About Time. There's so many wonderful songs on here that are not only originally Jackie Wilson songs, but several Bobby Brooks Wilson originals on here. With others that are on here, say, another one that you do have writing credits on, and there's something about it that I love. The song is I Can't Love You Anymore. And gosh, by title, this is set up to be a breakup song. Then we get to the follow-up words to I Can't Love You Anymore. Pause, than I do right now. And it's like, oh, good. He just saved it. He rescued it for me.
First listen to that song, you would think, oh, it's a breakup song. But no, it's not. Not at all. It's my heart is so full, I can't give you no more. That song is basically about somebody that's never satisfied, to be honest. The original writer on that song is a guy named Bob Madder. And when he brought that song to me, I said, well, let me work on it. And then me and Tony got in the studio, and we add our own twist to it. And he loved it, and off and running. One of the wonderful things that I hear all the time, especially when I do the cruise ship tour, is I'm a fan of your dad, and now I'm a fan of yours.
Oh, excellent.
And that is what I want to hear.
Yep.
When I started down this impersonator track, every now and then my producer said, you're not an impersonator. I said, no, I know I'm not an impersonator, but I can't run away from it. That's where I started out. So I have to accept, you know, okay, this is where I started. And some people are going to associate me with impersonation. But as time moves on and as we keep radio going, I hope to change the audience, you know. I can't love you anymore.
Music in conversation with Bobby Brooks Wilson, keeping alive the music and spirit of his father, the legendary Jackie Wilson. Bobby has his own music out there as well, most notably a disc called It's About Time. More at BobbyBrooksWilson.com. Let's go now to KVCR's Lillian Vasquez with Art in Loma Linda and an easier way to get around.
My guest is Curtis Sharp. He is the Construction and Wayfinding Senior Project Manager with Loma Linda University Health. The reason I wanted to do this segment is with COVID-19 surrounding us, artists have not had the opportunity to participate in walks or festivals or fairs to sell their goods. So I'm hoping this project will help get the word out to some Inland Empire artists. You are part of a community art project. You have a call for artwork. Tell me what the project is and what you're looking for.
The company hired me a little over 4 years ago to implement a wayfinding strategy around the campus. With the collaboration with the city, we came up with an arrival sequence sign project in order to help segregate out traffic and move traffic throughout the city. So right now, on an average day, we can have anywhere from 60 to 80,000 people commuting through Loma Linda. We've got multiple hospitals, the main medical center. We've got East Campus Hospital. We've got a surgical hospital down the street. We've got the VA. And then, of course, beyond that, we've got Redlands Community. The thought was, as people come into this, maybe a medical district, trying to make it easier for people to get around the campus and get to their end destinations. We don't want people that are supposed to go to the VA to show up at our hospital. So the thought was is that we could put a project together that would allow kind of a seamless way of getting people from one destination to the other. During this process, in cooperation with the city, the agreement was that if we were to put signs in the public right of way, we'd have to meet certain conditions. One of the things that came up was putting public art on the signs. So this has been a real group effort between Loma Linda University Health and the city and coming up with what we call practical infrastructure that would help get people to the city and at the same time try to do it in a way where we can beautify the city and also get public participation. So the current project, we've completed phase one. We put up 13 signs and we have 13 winners. And it was a fun project where we invited community to come and participate.
Can you just tell me what wayfinding is? Because I know that makes sense to you because you do this, but wayfinding, now that I hear you, means is finding your way through the community, right?
Yeah, so generally wayfinding, if you want to give kind of a definition around it, basically sign communications that help get people to their end destination, whether it be on the roadways, around our campus, inside the building, it's to help people get to where they need to go. And different type of sign types will help provide that. Most people just don't think about what wayfinding is because most people see signs and they don't think much about it.
All right, well, let's talk about the goal and the theme of this year's artwork.
We're sticking with the same theme that we had last year, which is a health theme. We have different themes such as move, rest, refresh, breathe, to serve. These are examples of themes that our organization feel promote health. Since this is a health district and there's several medical centers within the community, we wanted to stay with a wellness theme, something that would promote health and reflect that within the community, having art presenting itself in the public right away.
And who's eligible to submit?
Local residents, anybody that is employed through Loma Linda University Health. Since our organization is not only a medical center, but a school, and working with the city, they thought it would be a good idea to add anybody who's a student. So we have reached out to the local Inland Empire community and colleges. So basically anybody who is a student can participate, and anybody who happens to be affiliated with an art or photography club can also participate. And also anybody who's 18 years of age and older.
And you briefly went over some of the themes. You said health, move, rest, refresh, and I think I saw learn in there. Are there others that are listed?
We have shine.
Shine.
Breathe. And serve.
Perfect. And this artwork could be photography, it could be graphic art drawn, or it could be painted. Are there any limitations to this?
There's really no limitations in the medium, except that everything has to be submitted digitally. We have made note, if you happen to be doing pixelated art, which is photography, you just have to be careful that you're using high enough resolution on your camera to where the end product will turn out appropriately, because you could look at a piece of print that's on an 8x11 paper, but when you blow that up to something that's 11 foot tall by 5 foot wide, it could get grainy. So we have some specifications in there in hopes that people will dial in a little bit on that in order to ensure that we're getting the end product we want. So typically what we're doing is we're saying, go ahead and submit your entries. It doesn't have to be the larger file, but what will happen is as we get to a semi-finalist stage, I will be reaching out to those people who have submitted and ask them for their original art file so that we can have our vendors test the file to make sure that we're going to get the resolution that we want when it's put on the final structure.
Great. Our guest is Curtis Sharp. He is part of a community public art project in Loma Linda with Loma Linda University Health. Where specifically will the artwork be displayed, and how will it be displayed? Because these are big pieces of artwork. Because you said it's a wayfinding, finding your way throughout this medical district as you were describing. Where will they be displayed? And as I ask that, I know that there were winners from the past 4 years. Will that work stay, or is that work coming down and this will be replacing it, or are we just adding new pieces?
The first phase is complete, and we do have terms with the city that artwork can stay displayed for a certain amount of years, at which time the art will be updated. So the current pieces will be up for several years, or at our discretion when we want to rotate in new images. And then the second phase will be new digital art. So we have our new call of entry. We're requesting that submittals be in by August 15th. We're hoping to get some real unique images that will hopefully reflect health within the community. The actual signs where the art is displayed is on the backside of the sign. So the front of the cabinet will have some branding as far as the city logo and our logo. Also, we have directional panels that tell you to turn left or right with those communications on them. The front of the sign is the functional sign that tells people where they are and where they're going. The backside of the cabinet is where we put the public art, because we want people to have a sense of awareness of where they are. And so it kind of ties in to the whole arrival project, the health district theme. The back of the sign cabinets will be viewed a little bit more from a distance. So oncoming traffic going the opposite direction can see it. Pedestrians will see it as they're walking up and passing the sign. It's meant to be kind of subtle images where people can view from afar. But as you walk around the campus, you'll get a full appreciation for everything that's being displayed.
I'm wondering if you can also use these signs for when someone calls in and you can tell them, turn left at the lemons, at the sign that has the lemons featured on it. Because that's still finding your way. Is that possible? I don't know.
Well, that's possible. You see, when you give directions, right, you'll have some people that are very specific in that you go two blocks and then you turn left.
Yes.
You'll have other people that'll say, go down the street until you see the McDonald's.
Exactly. You know that's how I do mine.
Right.
I do all of mine by foods.
Yes, exactly.
You know,
so,
turn left at Baker's, turn right at Pizza Hut.
So in this case, we have like one image that has a big digital graphic of a face, and you can see that the face looks like it's moving. And so people can describe that, which is right before the parking structure.
Right.
Or we've got sliced oranges on the other side of the campus. And if you happen to be going to the Welcome Center, you can say, well, if you've gone past the sign that has the oranges on it, you know you've gone too far. So, yeah, so the artwork actually is a functional element as well, in that it can be used as wayfinding, not just artwork, but it could be interpreted as functional or art or all of the above.
Now, I want to ask you, what happens if maybe an artist submits a piece of artwork under the rest or refresh, and maybe the people receiving it think it's more of a shine or a breathe? Does that happen, or does the artist need to submit it in the right category?
They start off on the right category, but because images can be interpreted as that, it could end up on another sign location, depending on, you may end up feeling that you have a certain amount of images in a category, and maybe you don't have quite enough of what you're looking for in the final vote. We have them submit things into categories in order to help us categorize and help us get through the voting process, because it'd be very confusing if we had 8 themes with no segregating out, because then you'd have people looking at hundreds and thousands of images. So by trying to group them, it makes the voting process a little easier. But then if you find that you've kind of narrowed it down to a point where, well, these 2 images are good, but we really need another third image to kind of capture what we're looking for based on our criteria. To kind of give you an example, we have refresh and then we have rest. And those are 2 types of themes that kind of overlap one another. And someone could interpret refresh as rest, depending on the artist who submitted. Sometimes you'll have stuff that has 1 or 2 or 3 elements of any of the themes. So we may look at those if need be. We're trying to be very open-minded, but at the same time, we're trying to follow a process in order to give everybody a fair chance to winning a commission on the art that they submit.
My guest is Curtis Sharp. He is a senior project manager with Loma Linda University and the Community Public Art Project. So we talked about a winner. What do they win if they're selected, other than the opportunity to show their art?
Yes. $500 per entry that we want to accept for the sign. And so if you submit multiple entries and we like more than one of your art pieces, you've got a chance of winning more than just $500.
Right on.
It's $500 per image.
Cool.
Yeah.
Last year's recipients, I know some of the winners were from La Sierra University. Do you recall any of the pieces that were chosen from La Sierra off the top of your head?
The sliced oranges were one of them.
Oh, really? Can you speak to one of them or what you thought of the students that submitted from La Sierra University?
They've got a great art design program over there, and I thought that we got a lot of great quality images, and with that, a lot of diversity as well. Really pleased with their participation. They were one school that really showed a very strong interest and provided more entries than any other schools. But we did get entries from like Redlands Art Association. We got entries from St. Andrews University, which is an affiliate of one of our schools through the Seventh-day Adventist community. So we did other entries that were awarded that weren't just from La Sierra, but we did have a lot of images that were displayed on the first phase that were from La Sierra. They did a really outstanding job, and I look forward to their participation in the second phase, but I'm also looking forward to seeing entries from other schools as well.
And lastly, deadline and details to submit. When is the deadline and where can they go for more information?
The deadline is August 15th. At that point, what we do is I go into the website and I see how many entries have been submitted. If we feel that we've received enough entries in order for us to start voting and we have good quality images, we'll stop there. The terms and conditions also state that we may extend the public art program a little bit further if we're still looking for more submittals.
And where can they go for more information to learn about all that you've been discussing?
if they just go to their web browser and type in Loma Linda University Public Art Project, the website will show up.
Curtis, I want to thank you for your time. It's been fun talking, and I hope you get a slew of entries.
Thank you. And I really appreciate the interview, and I look forward to seeing some outstanding artwork submitted. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
That was KVCR's Lillian Vasquez in conversation with Curtis Sharp, Construction and Wayfinding Senior Project Manager with Loma Linda University Health. Submissions for art are still being accepted. More information again by simply searching Loma Linda University Art Project. Now we have Lillian Vasquez once again, now in conversation with one of the artists selected so far, Katie Nichols. She's a student at La Sierra University and has several of her pieces being used.
What themes did you submit, and what was your art representing?
I actually submitted my art as part of a class last year. I was taking Graphic Design 1. My professor offered it as an option for one of the things, and I was actually the only student in my class who took advantage of doing this project. They had different themes such as shine, move, learn, and rest. And the cool thing is that I actually live in Loma Linda.
Nice.
So this project was really motivating for me because the thought that it was going to be put up as a public art project in my own town really motivated me to see it come to fruition. So I made about 20 different entries, and I am a graphic design major. Even though I did some submissions that were fine art based and some photography based, most of it was graphic, and I tried to really use colors to create emotion and bring out those words that they wanted, like rest and shine. And I tried to make each piece look like it fit with each other as a cohesive installation. And
oh,
I think
nice.
That's what really gave me an edge in getting 5 of the signs, because I tried to make signs that would look good as a whole.
And complement each other, obviously. That's
yes,
what you were going for.
Exactly.
Yeah, so one of my favorites when I looked at last year's winners was the slice of citrus. I love citrus, and I love that look. And then I think Curtis said that was one of yours.
Yes. So I am really into health myself, so that one was really fun for me, and I love doing little fruit graphics. And for that one, I started with just a base shape of an orange, and I changed the colors, and I changed the opacity, and overlaid them to create a composition, and it turned out really cool.
Yeah, it really did. I really like it. Because you submitted so many, how long did each one take? Is it something you do in a week? Is it 3 weeks? How long is it taking you to do all these? Or is it something that comes to you and you can start on it and you're done within 10 hours?
It's kind of hard to measure that exactly because, like I said, I originally started doing this as a project for a class at school, and then it turned into something much bigger than that. So some of them I was thinking about in my head, and it took a little bit longer to be able to actually make them and draw them on the computer. And then some of them, you know, take like 30 minutes and you're like, wow, that's like my favorite one. So as a graphic designer, it's kind of weird like that. Like, you can't always measure things in time, because sometimes the things that took you the shortest amount of time are actually some of the best things that you make.
That's a good feeling, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't always happen like that, but yeah, it's definitely not a consistent thing. But so much of art is going through that creative process of first brainstorming in your head and then, you know, like putting it to paper. Like, I have so many times, I know this sounds silly, but I have a lot of times where things come to me when I'm dreaming and I have to immediately write them down or draw them or sketch them because I forget my dreams so easily. Some things come like that, and then some things just come by just messing around on the computer and just playing around and playing with things and putting different compositions together. So I'd like to say it's an exact science, but it's not. And that's what makes art art, you know?
Well, I think that dreaming, for a lot of people, that's where I write some of my best speeches. So there's something to that dreaming thing. There must be.
Exactly, yep.
So what are you working on for this year, theme-wise? I don't want you to give away any secrets, but, you know, what are you working on for this time?
I'm definitely going to keep with the graphic elements because I think it looks really clean and sharp with the graphic work. That's all I'm going to say for now, but I want to...
Okay. Have you seen your artwork on display, and what did you think when you drove by?
The first time I actually saw it, I was on my way to school at La Sierra, and I was driving down my normal street that I go down, and I looked down the street, and it was weird because it had been like a year since I actually turned the artwork in.
Yeah.
So I looked down, and it was like I saw like this flash of something, and I was like, oh my gosh, I recognize that. And so I turned around, And I was like, wow, they are putting them up now. And it was so exciting.
I bet. How rewarding. My guest is Katie Nichols. She's an art student at La Sierra University. And we're talking about the community art project that's going on in Loma Linda. Now, I mentioned you are an award-winning artist, with you receiving 5 Addy Awards, and one of them gold, from the Inland Empire American Advertising Federation. How was that night for you?
That was definitely a very exciting and unexpected night for me. I did not go into it thinking I was going to win 2 gold Addy Awards, especially one being in the professional category. Oh. And my professor, Terrell Thomas, he urged me to submit my signs to the professional category and not the student one. And at first I was like, you know, I'm probably not going to win anything, but at least I can put it towards something, because it was a real project that was installed. So I went into that night just happy to be with my fellow classmates, and I ended up winning a scholarship that night and 2 gold Addy Awards, one for the student and one for the professional category. So that was really exciting, and it was nice to show some support for my La Sierra University and kind of put us on the map along with my other students. Really fun.
Yeah, it was really great. I didn't realize you'd won 2 gold, so congratulations. And the bigger thing is the one in the professional when you're a student. So you probably thought, I'm not a professional, there's no way. And then you win that one as well. So that's quite an honor, and congratulations.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm very thankful for it, and I'm very honored.
And I have to say that what you were wearing that night looked really smashing on you. It was really a great outfit.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, it's actually from a brand called Lilly Pulitzer that I work for. It's a designer clothing company, and I would like to move up in the company with them and hopefully someday become a marketing director for them. And if not, I'd like to open up my own business in marketing and kind of find a way to bridge my passions in health and fashion and marketing and art. I eventually want to get my master's degree in marketing.
Well, it sounds like you have it all planned. Good luck with that.
Thank you.
Well, congratulations on your win, and good luck with your entries this year. Thanks for taking the time and sharing with us.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me.
That was KVCR's Lillian Vasquez speaking with Katie Nichols, with several of her pieces being used with the Loma Linda University Art Project. Once again, more information, including how to submit your art, with a search for Loma Linda University Art Project. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Katie Nichols, and again to Curtis Sharp, organizer of the project. Thanks again also to Bobby Brooks Wilson and to Nathan Goethals for originally putting me in contact with him. Here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, Sharina Wadd, and Benjamin Perper. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, so thanks to Sean as well. Many past shows can be found through iTunes, Spotify, NPR1, and Google Play, and most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. Also, you can now tell your smart speaker to play KVCR. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.